The Israel Report for the latest news and insights with Anthony Reich.
Anthony Reich, a very good morning. How are you?
Boker Tov. Yeah, looking at very ominous black clouds gathering this morning. We're in for a wet weekend by the sounds of things, by the looks of things. So hopefully we will be back to a little bit more rain.
Yeah, as you were telling us,
we need it.
Yeah, you told us yesterday that although it started off a very wet season, it hasn't continued that way. So let's hope that the rain does come.
We're certainly hoping so, because apparently the levels of the Kinneret water levels in general have gone down over the last month or 6 weeks. And this is the time of year when we're really hoping that they go up rather than down, because obviously we have to prepare for the summertime. So, yeah, everybody's looking at it. And even people like me who don't particularly like the rain understand that we need to have a little bit of rain now. We've had some really amazing, amazing summery weather over the last month or so. Quite warm during the day, very, very sunny indeed. But it seems as if the rain is back.
Well, that is a good news, hopefully. Israel has been blamed for dozens of deaths that were caused by airstrikes in Syria. That was on Tuesday night. What do we know about those raids, Anthony?
Well, you know, this has become part of a pattern that we've seen over the last few years. Some statistics suggest that there have been something like 1,000 airstrikes directed at Syria over the last 5 years, over Iranian positions, particularly in Syria over the last 5 years, which is a lot. I mean, if we kind of do the numbers, it's 200 attacks a year. It's almost one every 1.5 days. It's very, very frequent indeed. And obviously, we don't talk about all of them. I try to mention them because I think that it shows that there is a great deal of activity going on in the background. And even though these are not attacks that now attract front page news, I think that they are really important in terms of Israel's overall security. And this time around, the attacks were directed more towards the Iraqi border of Syria. And we understand that there was a massive attack that took place there, which destroyed some sort of a warehouse type facility, and that literally up to 40 Syrian soldiers and Iranian supporters may well have been killed in those attacks, which shows, again, quite a groundswell of activity going on. We understand that there are really two main things that go on around that part of Syria, the first of which is the flow of goods, arms, weaponry from Iran through that Iraqi region into Syria, and not only for the use within Syria, but potentially also to move across towards Lebanon to Hezbollah forces in Lebanon. So the movement of weaponry, of ammunition, of military hardware, it apparently goes through there. But apparently, that's also a base from which drones have been operated in the past, and in fact, even drones that have been reported to have penetrated Israeli airspace. So there seems to be some sort of a real technology base that goes on there, where the armies of the Syrian forces, as well as other renegade armies, but by and large supported by Iran, are operating in that area. We obviously won't hear anything more official,
of course,
about those attacks, not who carried them out and not the reason why they might have been carried out. But we know that Iran has really been active in building bases, not only in that part of Syria, but indeed in other places, which have become festooned with tunnels, buildings, warehouses, some significant infrastructure that's gone into establishing bases around that area. And so therefore it comes as little surprise that Israel is sensitive to the fact that the Iranians are establishing that strong base there and trying to do whatever they can to limit the extent to which the Iranians are basing themselves there. And of course, ahead of the change of the U.S. administration, it's very difficult to understand what may be in the new era once the new president takes over, which is slated for next week, and how the new U.S. administration might view things. So one wonders to what extent things are being conducted now in the last few days of the old administration to try to avoid too much attention being drawn to this once the new administration takes office. So I think we've got a lot of interesting things awaiting us over the next week or two, particularly in terms of, you know, what the new U.S. administration will look like. But my suspicion is that these attacks against targets in Syria and particularly on that Iraqi side of the border will continue at least for the foreseeable future.
What's fascinating to me is that it's almost like everybody turns a blind eye to this. It's kind of become accepted now that Israel's going into Syria, allegedly, but certainly it would seem as though it is that is the case. Israel goes into Syria, bombs the bejeebies out of these Iranian bases, and life carries on, and there's some mutterings and protestations, but then life carries on as normal. This has become very much part of the pattern. We haven't heard a word from Russia around it, and we know that they're involved in the region. There just hasn't seemed, it just doesn't seem to be any repercussions around this on either side.
I think that's true. I think the mutterings are there. I'm not too quite sure about the protestations. I haven't really seen any criticisms of what's carried on there. Obviously, the loss of life is very, very unfortunate, and I know that the Israeli Air Force and the IDF do whatever they can in order to prevent loss of civilian life. And I should qualify that because I think they feel less sensitive about the loss of life where we're talking about operatives, people who actually present a threat to life and limb, those people living in Israel. So in that sense, I think that, the loss of operatives' lives is not quite regretted as much. But yeah, I mean, no protestations, no criticisms, not from Russia, not from any of the human rights organizations that usually, say things. So you're right. It's become part of an accepted pattern of life. And I think to some degree, the world, at least many countries around the world, appreciate the fact that Israel is constantly doing this because to some degree it keeps a control over what Iran is able to do as it spreads its tentacles around, and obviously trying to spread its tentacles to areas within the Middle East is the first and the easiest part, but it doesn't end there. So to the extent that that spread can be prevented or can be limited in the immediate term, means essentially that it could potentially be also limited further afield as Iran tries to gain influence in other places.
Anthony, moving on, the next hearing in the corruption trial of Prime Minister Netanyahu has now been postponed. Is there significance to it being postponed?
Well, last week, the court ruled that the hearing would not be postponed. The hearing was actually set down for Tuesday of this week, the day before yesterday. And a court particularly ruled, in light of the lockdown that had been announced already at that time, that the hearing would go ahead no matter what, in spite of the fact that the Prime Minister's legal team did try to get a postponement to the hearing. This week, it was all changed where the court did decide in the end to postpone the hearing from January the 13th, the day before yesterday, at now until February the 8th. And the reason that the court gave was because social distancing couldn't be maintained in that courtroom. There has been talk about potentially holding the trial in a much bigger area, potentially in a courtroom in Tel Aviv even, rather than Jerusalem, or even in the National Convention Center Binyanei HaUma, which is a large facility in Jerusalem. And we understand that those recommendations have been rejected on the basis that the view is that the Prime Minister should be tried as any other regular citizen in Israel should be tried. That's the reasons that are given for why the hearings are not being held in a bigger location. And once they're already held in a bigger location, then of course more people could fit into the courtroom and with the rules of social distancing being applied. But in this case, idea of holding it in a larger courtroom has been rejected, even though one has to say it seems as if the Prime Minister hasn't necessarily been treated as a regular citizen. His court hearing has been postponed already for 2 years since the police recommended that he be indicted. So one wonders whether a regular citizen in Israel would enjoy that kind of a delay as well. The problem now, of course, is that the next hearing is set down for February the 8th. Witnesses are due to be called. That will be exactly 6 weeks before we go into the next election. There seems to be no doubt in my mind that the Prime Minister will absolutely use the excuse of the next election to somehow to try and delay the court hearings further. He will claim that holding the public hearings at that time and calling witnesses and opening all of this up to the general public potentially harms his election campaign and therefore is unfair to him in the way that he can present himself to the electorate ahead of that March 23rd election, which has now been set down. So it wouldn't surprise me if the February the 8th hearing takes place and then simply is further adjourned until a later time after the election, or something else which, you know, it will come in the way to make sure that that hearing doesn't proceed. But at the moment, we're just seeing one delay after another. The court at one stage trying to be very, very stringent and say we're not going to suffer any further delays. And then for some reason, minds were changed. So at the moment, it's all delayed until February the 8th, and then we'll see what happens after that.
And it also needs to happen, and it needs to be put to bed, because this has become such a theme in Israeli politics and Israeli life that I can't imagine that it's doing any good for the country.
Yeah, I don't think it's doing any good at all for the country, and the, you know, the attitude that the Prime Minister's team has taken all the way along this particular path is that more delay is better for the defendant than accelerating it and getting it over and done with, which of course brings a certain level of suspicion to what the defendant might think about his chances of defending himself, because if he felt so strongly about his innocence in this case, then one would imagine that he would want to just get the trial done over and sorted out, come out on the other side clean as you would expect to, and move on with the next thing. But these delays do certainly bring some suspicion to exactly what happened there. And of course, now with the death of Sheldon Adelson that we announced, that we spoke about yesterday, there is some view that his demise has also potentially damaged the cases, because he has been involved in some of the activities which surround these cases. Not that he was necessarily suspected of any wrongdoing, but there was some involvement on his part, which some people now feel may well strengthen the Prime Minister's ability to defend himself and weaken the prosecution's case against him.
And absolutely. Israeli companies have performed well in the U.S. stock exchange during 2020. Which companies are the standout names for the last year?
Well, for me, the real standout name is a company called SolarEdge. This is a company that produces solar electricity. And it started 2020 with a market capitalization of $4.5 billion traded on NASDAQ. And it ended the year with a market cap of over $16 billion and effectively became the largest Israeli company by market capitalization size. It overtook Teva, and it's larger than Amdocs and Wix and some other companies, famous Israeli companies that we know about. So this is a company that's done particularly well. Unfortunately, during 2020, Amdocs lost its guider, the person, the CEO, who really led Amdocs from a small private company to be a public company, Guy Seller. He passed away during the course of 2020, and yet they've managed to replace him and to really do some really amazing things in the whole solar energy market. And they're even advertising systems that one can put on the roof of a private home. You can cover the roof of your home with solar panels. You can sell that electricity back to the national grid and earn money from that. So it becomes an investment, and of course, something that's good for the planet, a nice green source of electricity. The other company that I wanted to mention was Fiverr, which is spelled with two R's at the end, five with two R's. This is a company that was listed about 18 months ago. And if we look at, for example, Zoom, which was the darling of the 2020 financial year in terms of increase in share price, Zoom increased its share price by 400%, and Fiverr increased its share price during the year by 800%. During the course of 2020. And I understand that Fiverr was the single largest mover out of all companies on all US exchanges during 2020. This is a company that's in what they call the gig market. Gigs being people who just are freelancers and do work on a per job basis, and they advertise their services that they offer in the gig industry, and then people pick them up. People who might be, I don't know, graphic designers, or they might be architects, or they might just be freelance workers. And Fiverr is a platform which they use to advertise their services, and people use to procure the services. It's been an amazingly, amazingly successful story. I don't think that Fiverr could have predicted the effects of Corona on their share price and on their business, but they are really one of the amazing standout performers amongst Israeli companies during 2020.
Absolutely incredible. Time is 8 o'clock. Anthony Reich, this is where we love and leave you. Have a fantastic weekend, and let's hope that you do get the rain that Israel needs, and we'll catch you on Monday morning.
Hi FM, your station of choice since 2008.